Just waiting for Skip to come on. You know, I miss him. Especially when he's bald. He looks like a shaved tan scrotum right there with earplugs on.
This will be the first episode that I've done without a hat, I'm pretty sure.
Is it really?
You're also like one of those Conehead guys from Saturday Night Live.
But not quite as tall. Thank you.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Blood, Sweat, and Gear Bodybuilding Podcast. My name is Scott McNally, and I host this program with Skip Hill and S2H. S2H is our go-to guy when it comes to discussing all the weird and random compounds that exist in the bodybuilding world. And Skip Hill is a coach who's been working in the industry for the past 2 decades. So between the three of us, we're here to answer your questions. For starters, we've got a topic. Bodybuilding over 30, is it worth starting if you just caught the bug? Then sodium and the role that it plays in your nutrition and in your performance. Good communication to your clients as a coach. And increasing appetite when you're trying to gain muscle. Guys, we're going to cover all that. We're going to do it right now. So, guys, we got a bunch of questions over at the Advices Facebook group. We posted up a thread the other day. So we've got a bunch of stuff over there. We're going to tackle those questions today. If anybody else has any questions they want to add to the show, you know, we are recording this live on the Advices Radio Facebook page. So you guys can post up questions here and we'll try to tackle them. But before we get to all of that, I wanted to throw out a topic here. And this is something that I hear a lot. This is a big question that floats around. And I don't know if I want to say it floats around like within our community, because everybody who's listening to the show, I think for the most part, unless you're new, unless you're just getting into bodybuilding, you already are involved. But the question is should I even try getting into bodybuilding over the age of 30 years old? And I want to say the answer for me is flat out to spoiler alert. Yes, I think you can still do some really awesome stuff, but I thought that we could probably delve into this a little bit deeper. You know, what are going to be some of the things that might hold you back if you already are, say, 30 or even older? You know, some of these guys, maybe they're 40. What are the benefits? You know, Skip, are there any benefits to not having touched a weight until the point you're 30?
There's a huge benefit. How do I explain this? There's a huge benefit in the sense that I think training years are like dog years. So as an example, if you take someone who is my age who started when they were 40, or you take someone my age who started when they're 15, I can almost guarantee you that and this is a weird thing, but the large majority of time, the ones who start later don't have, it's almost like they have better elasticity with their skin.
Huh.
I'm dealing with loose skin. And I always think about this because it's an issue for me now within maybe the last 4 or 5 years. When I start to get real, real lean, my abs around my belly button tend to be a little bit, that skin is just loose.
Okay.
And so I always get irritated because I look at these fuckers who started later and their skin looks so much younger. And I swear I think it has to do with the, you know, how basically years and years and years of bulking, cutting. And even if it's not, you know, I don't get huge in the off season like I used to and blow up, but I did it for enough years that it starts to take a toll. Yeah. You don't have with these older guys who haven't done that. You'll see it with people who were real heavy and carried a lot of weight.
Yeah.
That's different. But I look at him, I go, that's not fair. Like, what the fuck? I've been training for, you know, you start to do that, it's not fair thing. Well, I've been training for so long. I deserve to not have this loose skin and not be dealing with this shit.
Yeah.
But from a muscle standpoint, I mean, it's almost funny when you ask the question, because I know it's I get asked this question a lot. I'm sure a lot of trainers do, but 30 is nothing. You just got to get to damn near 50 to realize that it's not anything. So starting late, I mean, you know, I consider the 30s, and you guys, you may feel differently about it, but 30s, mid 30s. I laugh when there's a master's division at 35. That's not master's. That's just 35.
No, yeah.
You're in your fucking prime. I mean, I know my skin and everything else was great when I was 40. It was as I got later into my mid 40s and that it started to take a little bit of a turn.
Yeah, I remember thinking to myself, like, so I had trained when I was a kid. You know, I knew all about bodybuilding as a kid growing up. My parents were involved with fitness and with lifting, and their friends were, you know, more competitive, more serious, you know, people that like used chalk and guys that considered getting on stage, things like that. So it's not something that I, you know, it's something that I grew up around, and I lifted for a few years, and then I took a different route, you know, went down to art school, focused on all the cerebral stuff. And, you know, through college, I did a little bit of training for a period of time. I got real serious, but it was nothing like when I really buckled down. And when I really buckled down and I got serious, I was in my late 20s. I almost was 30 years old when I started. And I remember thinking to myself at that point, my mindset then was thinking that if I don't start this now, I probably won't ever be able to grow muscle again. Like, this is it. This is my last ditch chance. When in reality, now that I've been doing it for, you know, 15 years, I'm thinking to myself that, yeah, I could have probably started later and still done really well. You know, it's I definitely am glad that I started, and I am one of those really late starters. I do feel like, you know, when you talk about like those dog years, I do feel like training really, really beats you up. It really ages you. Like if you really train hard, if you're aggressive with it, if you're using gear, if you're using, you know, thyroid hormone, shit like that, I do feel like it aged me faster. Would you guys agree with that in any way?
On the inside.
Yeah. How about you, Scott? What do you think, man?
I don't know. I mean, you only age as fast as the days go by. So it's, you know, it's hard to say. It's like, you know, if we all spun our lives back X amount of years way back and we did it all different, would our health anything be different now? I mean, I don't know. You know, what would you have done, not taken or taken? Or it's hard to say. I think it's kind of one of those things, a question you can't really answer.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think we can agree, though. I mean, let's just say you're maybe not necessarily an alcoholic, but you drink a lot, or you spend a lot of fucking time in the tanner and you don't know what a moisturizer is. I mean, a day is a day, but I mean, clearly there are people who look much, much older than they actually are based on the things that they have done and their environment and the choices that they make. So, I mean, I agree with, I think what it is more of an inside thing. You know, you talk about feeling beat up and stuff, and yeah, I'm, you know, between my back and my knees, and, you know, and I always laugh and say, I'm like, today a goal of mine these days is to have the muscle more sore than the joints surrounding it.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
That's a good day.
Yeah.
And so I think that from an outward appearance, I mean, other than skin issue and, you know, those sorts of things, I don't think that we feel, you know, older trainers feel our age as far as much how we look. We feel it more on the inside. I don't even know if it's necessarily unhealthy. I mean, obviously things that come along, to what degree you do those things could potentially be unhealthy. But I think it's just more of the inward feeling, the aching, the, you know, I know getting up off the floor, if I'm watching TV with the kids, you know, I push off my knee, I want to help push off the coffee table. And yeah. I laugh because I'm like, wow, 5 hours ago I was squatting with no problem at all, you know. So I think it's those things. But the only difference, I think, is hormonally from the younger, you know, if you're in your late 30s and you start, or you start when you're 25, you know, I mean, obviously hormonally the environment's going to be quite a bit different. So then the question becomes, well, are you going to alter your hormonal environment? Because if you do, then I don't think it matters a whole lot. Now, if you're going to stay natural forever and ever, hallelujah, and I think that's great if you do, training naturally and starting out, and I'm only saying later 30s again, just because I just don't think 30 is very old. But I know a lot of people do. I mean, if you're 20, you think 30 is fucking old. You think 50 is, you know, archaic. I get that, or very old. But it's a hormonal issue, I think, more than than anything else, but you can damn sure. I've had tons of clients who don't even start training until they're in their late 30s or even into their 40s, and they look.
Yeah, I mean, you just, I mean, really at 30, you can look back and go, okay, I missed my natural hormonal peak. And then you also could have missed that many years of training, but that doesn't mean you can't start. I mean, saying could I compete in bodybuilding at 30 start? I mean, anybody can compete.
Sure.
You know, it's not like you're going to go and say, I'm going to, you know, make the city Chiefs and go to the Super Bowl when I'm 30 and never played football. So I think you can do anything you want to do in that regard, but you do miss your hormonal peak. I think if you look at most, I won't say all of them, because there's some exceptions, but most top bodybuilders started lifting when they were really young, you know, 13, 14, football, you know, for the males, and, you know, and then came through all that. You know, I mean, I think a lot of those guys are being, I think, didn't use much stuff until they got in their 20s, so they had a, you know, they got after it pretty hard in their teenage years. So obviously that's a lot of ground to make up. But if you wanted to go compete in an NBC show, you know, maybe there is somebody that could become pro if they just first lifted at 30. I'm sure it's possible. But, you know, you are kind of behind the curve, but it doesn't mean you can't still get out there and enjoy it and, you know, work on your progress and make it a personal goal, you know, all that kind of stuff.
I bet you, you know what, because I think you're right that a lot of the guys who are pro, they started training young. I can think of like, I think of a good pro and I compare that to myself. Like I'll take Steve Kuklo because I saw him come up as a kid and, you know, he's younger than I am. And I remember watching him as a teenager competing here in Michigan and blowing adults away, you know, as like a guy who was like 19, 20 years old. Stepping on stage with guys who had been training for 20 years, he was still new at it. I think that the guys that end up turning pro, it's something that came really naturally for them versus before I lifted, people wouldn't have thought like, oh yeah, he natural athlete right there. I didn't look like that. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't playing sports and stuff. So it took me longer to find it. So I think that there probably is an element of that. It's like, I had to go through a bunch of shit and then decide like, hey, I want to get stronger. I want to grow muscle. I want, you know, all the things that come along with it. I loved the challenge and I discovered all that stuff. And then I, you know, I grew into it, but I was by no means like on the path from a young age. Cause for me, I probably was not meant to be a great bodybuilder. You know what I mean? I don't have the physique. I don't develop the muscle the way one would expect. You know, don't have the frame for it. It doesn't mean I can't still love it. It doesn't mean I can't still excel at it. In fact, I would say, you know, I've grown more muscle and gotten into better shape than, you know, most people, I would say, in the world probably ever will. But that's because there's only so few of us that actually take it to this extreme. You know, when we look at competitive bodybuilders, you know, I'm not even near like a national level guy. So there is that. But general population, all of the human beings, then yeah, I'd be in the upper echelon still, I'm sure, you know. So I think that that's an aspect. Skip, out. You started pretty young, didn't you?
Yeah, I started at 14. And I think you make a good point. It's funny because I was going to make a similar point and you beat me to it, which makes it a great point, by the way.
Thank you.
I think what happened, you know, Steve is a good example of someone who, look, basically at some point, boys will grab a hold of something heavy, you know, whether it be in the weight room and at the gym, you know, in gym class or at a buddy's house. And I think what happens when you have that genetic superiority and you respond very quickly to it, you know, we all want to do shit that we're good at and that we get attention for. And I would imagine that very early on, just still using Steve as an example.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of pros are like this too. You respond so quickly that you go, oh shit. Okay. Well, I'm not doing other sports, because people who are doing other sports tend to just kind of dabble in weight training. Even if they're good at it, they're probably so good at sports that they get so much more attention from doing the sports. And as a teenager, attention is everything. So you might put that off until your sports are done, whether it's out of high school or maybe you play sports into college, that sort of thing, and then pick up training and excel at it. But I think with someone who has that genetic gift, or you're more predisposed to responding very well, you pick up on it and you just kind of run with it, and that becomes your passion because you're really good at it, and that's what you're getting attention for. So yeah, if you're not a pro, it could be that you when you dabbled with it when you were a teenager, it wasn't all that impressive. You didn't make a lot of progress, and you thought, but you kind of liked it. So later in life, or further down the road, you come back to it after you've gone to college, or you've been in a a band, or you've been a skater, or and you kind of just tend to fall away from those things. You go, hey, you know, I kind of feel like working out. You know, I remember I used to like working out, shit like that. Myself, when I was 14, I was good in sports, but I ended up trading sports for training. It just was more important to me to be in the gym and the single individual, almost selfish aspect of it, versus, well, shit, during a base, I remember in baseball, it drove me nuts. I'd be like, shit, I went 3 for 4, threw out, two people at second base, and we lost the game because this dumb fucker in right that he should have caught, and we were up by 2 runs until he fucked that up. Yeah. And those things used to bother me. I laugh and say I'm not a very good team player. And I think it shows in the sense that I refuse to work with anyone. Mm. Like I could fuck some shit up and make bad decisions and second guess myself, but I'm not working with anyone. This is a very individual, selfish motivation for me.
Yeah.
And I think that all those things play a part, but I think the genetic factor, I think, is a big one. And Steve is a good example of that.
Yeah. Anything else you guys can think of? Any advice that you would want to impart on anybody who, say, happens to come across this video or the audio podcast that is in that position? You know, somebody who is brand new to all of this and they're thinking to themselves, hey, should I even attempt it? This would be the time to throw it in. I can't think of anything else. My only advice is to just keep learning and keep doing it. That you definitely, there's no question, you can grow. You can still excel. You know, you can still do a lot of things.
Just be realistic. You know, I mean, you just got to look at your own progress. Look at what you're doing. Don't, you know, I think someone, you can jump into it 2 ways. You know, you can go, oh, wow, maybe you have some friends who bodybuild and they've been doing it for a while. And you're like, hey, I want to do this. But you got to be realistic that most people are, you know, it's going to take some time, and just, you know, make it a personal thing. Don't try to, you know, think you're supposed to be, you know, getting a pro card in 2 years, which, you know, there might be somebody that could, but, you know, be realistic. I would say don't have like unreal expectations.
Take a lot of gear and listen to BSG. I mean, yeah, outside
on a trend.
Yeah. Read my articles at Elite. I mean, what else? How else can I self promote here?
No, don't
get
read
coached
those.
By you. Get coached
be,
by you.
There's be coached that. By me, because I don't typically don't like coaching young people anyway. And I know there's a couple of my clients out there going, what? Because they're like 25. Look, if you're 25 and you're working with me, you're fucking cool and I like you, because if I didn't, I wouldn't be working with you.
Yeah.
Become a member at intensemuscle.com too.
Oh, because that's happening. All right, let's segue off of this. Because next topic before we get to questions, we're going to do that in just a minute. But I saw the post, Skip. You pulled the trigger. You're going to breathe some new life into the message board, Intense Muscle, which has been the home of DC training and a hotbed of tons of information of all of like the mid 2000. When did you start?
2004.
Okay, 2004, for the next decade, that place was just hopping, and all that information is still there. Now you're planning on bringing this back together. What is up with that, man?
Yeah, you're breaking up a little, but outside of that. And you know what? It's not just the home of DC training. It's actually the home of Team Skip, too. Just want to throw that in there.
Right on.
I made that post on Instagram and on Facebook, and I was actually kind of surprised by the response and the interest. So it was kind of cool because, you know, obviously the traffic there has been, you know, very, very low. There's tumbleweeds rolling through the website, figuratively, of course, not literally, but anyway. So all of a sudden that day after that post went up, we had this huge surge. Somebody said, oh, there was like 1,000 people online. And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't sound like a lot of people compared to the old days.
Yeah.
But that's pretty significant considering the traffic was so low. Now, it's just people jumping on to kind of check it out and, okay, I heard about it, I'll see. I don't know how much of an indication that really is as far as who will be interested when we're done with everything. But on the back end, I'm breaking my ass. It's part of the reason that my sleep is so messed up, because when I'm done with client work and everything else, you know, I got to get back in there and start fixing these minor kinks and stuff on the, you know, on the back end, so that everything is ready to go. And not just myself, but the old admin came back. He's helping out. Of course, nice. Dr. Scott Stevenson, Homonunculus, he's jumped in with both feet and he's helping out. So yeah, I'm continuing to interact with people as far as, you know, people who I feel would, you know, could help IM as far as providing top-notch information and stuff, and see if they're willing to commit to posting. And in large part, you know, the majority of people are pretty interested. Now, they could just be saying they are because they're being nice. We'll just have to see how it goes. But
sure,
you know, over the course of the next month, we're getting everything done, and everything is going real well so far. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I haven't set a date for a, you know, official relaunch or anything like that. But, yeah. You know, like I said, people are just dropping in, checking it out now, and, you know, posts are up a little bit. But, you know, if you want to get in and you want to see what it is and just kind of, you know, check it out, by all means, sign up or sign back into your, you know, I get this question a lot. Well, am I going to be able to use my same username and everything else? All we did was upgrade. I mean, everything is exactly the same. So yeah. If you can remember your password and your username, you're good. If you don't, you can, you know, message me and I can help you out. But definitely sign in, definitely check in or sign up and say hi.
Hell yeah. Kick ass. All right, guys, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will tackle a bunch of questions.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I wanted to break into this episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear to make three quick points, and I'll try to make them really quick. Number one, I wanted to say thank you to you, because you're fucking awesome, in case nobody told you that today. It's true. Thank you guys for listening, for enjoying the shows and asking questions and learning along with me. It's been a really awesome ride, and I'm glad to have you guys here. If you guys are listening on a podcast app, do me a favor and leave us a good review. That'll help other people find us. Number two, I wanted to thank Skip Hill for freely sharing his 20 plus years of bodybuilding education with us. I've learned so much from you, Skip. You are a teacher and you are a mentor to me, and you are my friend. So I'm grateful we get to do nearly 80 episodes of this show now. It's been a really cool experience. And guys, if you want to learn more from Skip, you can go on over to intensemuscle.com, where he's revitalizing the message board world. And of course, you can go to teamskip.com, where you can hire him as a coach and work with him one-on-one. And finally, but definitely certainly not least, truenutrition.com, our sponsor. I really appreciate you guys. You guys have you've done a lot for us, and you ask very little from us. So I thank you, True Nutrition, for being a great company and making high quality supplements that I've been able to trust the entire time that I've been into serious bodybuilding. It's been cool. You know, I'm glad that we have a company like them to turn to. Plus, they have a wide variety of everything you could possibly freaking need. They've got just about every protein under the sun. They've got, you know, all your basics like whey protein isolate to a really high quality pea protein isolate. They have, you know, hydrolyzed casein and Hydro Whey, all sorts of stuff. So definitely any protein you could possibly need, they've got it. And they've got a flavor for everybody's taste. Plus, they've got great health supplements. I'm a huge fan of their pre-workout stuff. So I mix all those things together each time I train. And my pumps have been sponsored by True Nutrition for a long time. So thank you guys very much. And you guys can shop with them using our code ADVICES. If you do that, it will help to support us. Plus, you will get a discount. All right, guys, enough of me babbling here. Let's get back to the one and only Mr. S2H from Texas. And of course, Skip. All right, guys, thanks for listening.
All right, guys, welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip Hill. and S2HM Scott McNally. We're over at the Facebook group Advices Radio. I'll put a link to that in the description here so you guys can link over there. Join the group. It's a private group. So definitely, if you join, we have these threads and everything else. You can post anywhere in that page, and we will take your questions. So we made a thread for this episode. I used a picture that we shot last year, Skip, at the Arnold. It was you making like a silly, goofy face. I don't know if you saw that one. You're doing like a kissy face to the camera.
Duck lips, yes.
Yes, duck lips. That's what anyway, it is.
Get with all the right. time, Scott.
JP asks, Skip, what's your take on sodium consumption, i.e. sodium type, amount, and effect on training, performance, and cosmetic appearance? Since he addressed it to you, Skip, let's go to you first, man.
Well, it's vitally important for starters. And you know what? It's one of those things that when I work with clients, I should not assume that they know that they need to have a specific sodium intake. So I've actually been working on that with clients because I have. Sometimes I make assumptions. I'm like, well, I don't work predominantly with like bikini competitors who for some reason just want to cut out all sodium and they think that that's super important to their plan. Look, I mean, sodium's huge for pump. It's huge for contractile force. And that just basically means that when you contract your muscles, they contract hard instead of soft and gooey. It's just hugely important. People tend to think that, well, I'm going to hold a ton of water. And this is where clearly it's a good question. I don't want to, give the guy who asks the question a hard time. But there are some things where I figure, oh, everybody knows this just because I've been doing it for so long. And clearly that's not the case. So if you're taking in enough water, you're not going to be holding water from a, you know, higher sodium intake. What typically happens when you hold water, it's just such a huge fluctuation over your normal sodium intakes. I mean, as an example, if you're going from, you know, 2000 milligrams to 7000 because you decided to eat, you know, a bunch of French fries and burgers and things like that, you're going to hold more water for a day, day and a half. But if your water intake is high enough, you'll just basically push the sodium out after a couple of days. So it's hugely important. I don't know what the other part of the question was. Things like soy sauce and mustard and Himalayan pink salt, which I think is, I don't want to go down that path. Just get your sodium. I don't think that it's terribly important where you get it from. Just get sodium. The amount, I don't know if he asked, but I mean, everybody, I think really the minimum is, unless you have extenuating circumstances with health and your doctor has given you specific parameters, I don't think anybody should be less than a couple thousand milligram. And it's it's not very common, but you can, people can build their sodium levels up to 5, 6, 7, sometimes 8,000 milligrams over time. Don't anybody fucking go do that tomorrow and start taking in 7 grams of sodium a day, because your body obviously isn't going to deal with that. Experiment back in 06 where I built 500 milligrams in every 4 or 5 days. I got up to 7 grams a day, and I'm telling you, the pumps were insane. The my muscles were contracting so fucking hard, it was ridiculous. But that was kind of my cutoff, where up to about 6 grams a day, I wasn't holding much water as long as I was pushing enough water. Yeah. And when I got to 7 grams, man, I'd turn my head and start sweating.
I bet, man.
And when you sweat, it just fucking pours out of you like a faucet.
I bet. I've seen it be too much sodium 3 times. And I think that, I don't know. I don't know what the level is. It's got to be like an individual thing, you know, but I've seen 3 people, and this is out of like, you know, everybody I've worked with. So I don't even know how many people I've worked with at this point, but after years and years, you could say, you know, in the thousands. So 3 times, it's been too much. And that was people that were all, none of them were really like none of them had a ton of muscle. I'll put it that way. Either middleweight competitor, figure competitor, and a men's physique competitor that were all pushing toward like 10 grams. 10 grams of salt.
Yeah.
That's a lot, man. And I feel like I couldn't get their water up high enough to flush it, you know? It's like you can only increase that water so much, right? So outside of those three people, I haven't seen an issue. It's funny because, man, Skip, you taught me something one time. You've taught me a bunch of stuff, honestly.
oh, that's impressive.
There was a mistake I made with a client, and I don't know if you even remember this story, but it was sweet potatoes. I told him to eat sweet potatoes. I told him he could eat rice or sweet potatoes. And it turned out he was using Bruce's candied yams for his sweet potatoes. And I was like, I couldn't believe that he was doing this. And we figured it out eventually because he was eating sweet potatoes and chicken. And then when we switched him to fish, man, he started getting so lean so fast. And it turned out when he started eating fish, he started using rice instead of sweet potatoes. So he went from eating Bruce's candied yams, which were like all the carbs plus 32 grams of sugar per serving, each serving five times a day, to, you know, going to rice with no extra sugar. And boom, he just started getting ripped. I was like, man, this fish is working great. And he was like, what?
This fish thins his skin.
Right. Yeah. For some reason.
With marshmallows on them are, you know, a little bit tough on you.
Right. Yeah. I
did the same thing one time. Long time ago. I got, this guy was the coach I was using, or the only one I ever used, he had yams on there. So I'm like, candied yams ought to be all right. You know, I was kind of probably knew better, but yeah, that didn't go over too well.
Well, we talked about this years ago on the show, and you told me, Skip, you're like, well, at the same time, you got to remember, you took for granted what kind of potatoes he was using. So as a coach, you do take some responsibility there. And I thought about it afterward, and I was like, you know what, man? He's right. You know, I do. I have to take some responsibility in that situation. So I don't take anything for granted anymore. You know what I mean? I'm like, and sodium is something that I still, even though I've had that in my mind, I still had not like told people, you need to have X amount of sodium in your diet. I just told them, eat plenty of salt. That had been, even I'll have like a frequently asked questions thing that I send to everybody that just gives them general ideas about like how to handle condiments and stuff like that. And I send that to everybody who starts a diet, and it's like just a cover all thing. And I say, you know, some of this stuff may apply to you. Definitely check it out. You know, I give like particular brands of like, you know, multivitamins or whatever that I suggest. And one of the things that I used to write was, you know, just keep your sodium consistent from day to day, and that don't cut your salt out. You know, you can add sodium to your meals, blah, 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 blah. And as long as it's consistent, that, you know, you'll be okay. But I don't say that anymore because of those three people. I've had it happen three times now, because I think people get it in their head sometimes when they're starting to diet that they start adding more salt, and that salt makes you feel full and it makes you feel satisfied. And so you start craving more salt. And then you keep eating salt, and then you're probably getting thirsty because of that. So you just, you know, it's a cyclical thing, I think, that you just keep wanting more and more of it. So yeah, I don't say that anymore, but yeah, I found that there were three people that like, they were all pushing 10 grams of sodium per day. All of them were sub 200 pounds, if not sub 150. And it was too much. It just, they had this watery look, you know, just like you couldn't get it flushed no matter what we did. So anyway, that was my input on salt. Scott, what do you think, man? What's your thought overall on sodium in the diet?
I mean, it's a central mineral. Water follows sodium into the muscle. That's why when Skip said he got really good pumps, it's pushing more water into the muscle. But, you know, you can overdo it. You know, it's, it depends on the size of the person. But I'd say somewhere in that 2,500 range, 3 grams, you know, it's pretty normal. But man, some people can take in more. It's kind of one of those person-to-person things with some people. But I, what you said, Scott, is the bigger, more muscular, lean muscle someone has, the more sodium they need, because they need more water to follow it into the muscle. And you can overdo it, though. I've had it, like Skip said. I've had my days of, like, way too much sodium. It's like you're, like, sweating like a whore in church. you know, you're not even doing anything. So I think that's a pretty good indicator when you have too much sodium. A lot of times is you'll start to warm up and sweat pretty easily. Mm. But, you know, on that yam thing, I learned something. I had a couple of competitors over the years say, "Hey, can I chew gum?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it's okay. Well, not 8 packs a day, you know." So I mean, literally, it was a female. She was chewing like 8 or 9 packs of gum a day.
Yeah,
and that'll catch up to you quick, you know. Plus, your jaw's got to hurt.
Yeah, you're gonna get very ripped through your jaw muscles on the side of your head. I think the bigger point, or just to point out this point, is, you know, like you're talking about as a trainer, it's difficult. You don't want to be presumptive and think that your clients know the rudimentary aspects of whether it be nutrition or training. Yet at the same time, it's kind of a balancing act because you don't want to offend your clients who actually do know something and have this extended or more above average knowledge by explaining rudimentary issues to them. So sometimes it's semantics and how you deliver it. You know, as far as, hey, you know, you may already know this. I know I've used this term or this phrase a lot with my clients. Look, you probably already know this, but I'm the Dr. Phil of bodybuilding, so I'm going to tell you, you know, reiterate what you already know. That way, if they don't know, they don't have to admit they didn't know.
Yeah.
But if they do know, it's like, oh, yeah, I knew that, but he was cool. He wanted to make sure that I knew that. Yeah. You know, these little things are, you know, they're just important because it can, when you know something as well as you do and you've been doing it for a long time, I think there really is that assumption. You know, my wife will come home and tell me, so I'm like, oh, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I got to stay late to do. And then she throws out 3 acronyms. And I'm like, bitch, I've been with you. You've been in this job for 25 years, but I don't know what CFM is. And shut up, Scott, and don't come up with something fucking stupid either. Because I know your gears are turning. Well, let's see. Cock, something. Yeah. But the point is I don't know what the hell this shit is, but she would assume that, oh, well, you know, I'm sure I've said this to him many times over, so he knows what this is.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the case. So, and I think with what we do too, I've said a million times, this isn't rocket science. We're not saving lives. And I understand that on the other side, you guys have made it, you know, it reminded me too, that it's still a very important thing that I do. And it means a lot to people and it's impactful. I completely get that. But at the same time, there are these things that we have clients do that can turn really bad and be potentially dangerous, not because directly what we're telling them to do, but if they don't understand what you're telling them to do and they do it wrong, you know, whether it be overdoing. I've told the story several times about the water intake. You know, I had a client, prep guy, you know, who took in all of his water during the day in like 4 hours and was projectile vomiting water.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck? He had to go to the hospital. Yeah. Well, that was the example I used, much like your yam, you know, much like the yam story. And that's where it's kind of a situation that happens where you go, oh shit, lesson learned. I need to be crystal clear. And as a trainer, and especially an online trainer where you don't get facial, you don't get the, those cues and the communication, you have to be very, very clear, crystal clear.
You do.
In what you're writing and what you're conveying to the client to do. Because about the time you think that they understand and it's just understood, it isn't. And it can go bad really, really fast, especially with contest prep.
Yeah, I can see that. That's good. Definitely good points. And yeah, man, it is. It's interesting because, you know what, too, I don't keep a ton of clients, so I've been able to do this. I've started to talk to people on the phone more. Because I started doing more training with my programs, which I used to never do that at all. It was like, just here's the diet, you know, with training, you're not spending a lot of money. So you can get training from John Meadows or, you know what I mean? You know how to train had always been my thought. But I've been doing more of that. So I'll do more phone calls and it's helping me to get a better connection to the people that I'm working with. I understand their mindset a little bit better. I know a little bit better how hard I can push them. But yeah, man, it's weird. It's interesting because you can't, You know, email, it doesn't give you a lot of those same cues of just like what talking to somebody in person, looking them in the eye can do for 5 minutes, right?
I'll agree with that, but I will say this. It also makes it very difficult to, you can't reference any of that conversation.
Absolutely. Unless you
have a ridiculously good memory.
Yeah.
And that's what I have always, so if you're going to do that, it's a good idea. I know on the occasion that I do, because I try not to have those conversations. There's a couple reasons, but the number one thing is I can't retain that information unless I'm actually making notes or recording it. And then when I record it, then I need to turn around and put it into text so that I have the reference. Number two, and I'm just being honest. So if any of my clients hear this, they'll be like, oh, shit, that's rude. It's just me being transparent.
Yeah.
When I give away my number, inevitably, one out of 20 people, and you might not think that's a lot, but one out of 20 people over 20 years means someone's blowing up my phone going, what's up? What you doing?
Yeah.
Hey, man, I was just, and it's, you know, you want to respond and you respond, but then it becomes, then you have created now this back and forth where it happens at the most inopportune or inconvenient time. And
you can't control that time either,
No.
So it's like, you don't want to be rude, but you know what? You just worked, and you finally are getting ready to take time off, spend time with your wife. You guys are going on a date. Yeah, no, I'm totally with you, man. So I've been very careful with doing that. And I had hesitated because I used to be super, super strict. Like, no, we just do email. That's it. But for me, it's been kind of an evolution. I'm having fun with it. But like I said, man, my volume is probably a lot lower. You know, it's like, I know a lot of people couldn't do that. And no, I don't plan on retaining any of it either. You know, it's like, we might talk training, but it's like anything we do that's got to be written down. Like, that's always still written down. Same thing with, like, you know, totally. I'm going to go way off on a tangent here, so I'll stop. But we've talked about that before. Like, you know, people sending messages with all the social media venues that are available now. If we start talking about your diet on telephone, on text, on Facebook and Instagram, plus email, then I'm going to lose some details really quick, you know?
Absolutely. And it's going to take you a long time to go, where did we talk about this?
Yes.
Oh, I got to run this out. And it's like, oh my God, where is this information? Yep, completely agree. And at the same time, look, what you're doing is invaluable for your client trainer relationship because you're building a rapport and you're getting to know them on a more, you know, basically on a more personal level. There's nothing wrong with I've heard people say before, well, it's all business. I don't need to build personal relationship. Mm. What the fuck do you not know about business? Mm. Just do you not have common sense or it's illogical to not want to build some sort. There are different levels. It can be minimal with some clients because they may not care to have that type of relationship, or it takes a long time. There are people I've trained with for a couple years before they get more personal and they want to talk and interact with you. So to completely ignore building a rapport or having a personal relationship on some level with your clients, it really is just horribly bad business. It's just bad. And you don't have to take a fucking college class to know that.
All right, I'll move on here. Casey Reed, a.k.a. Lats, says, Skip is one of the greats. I responded saying one of the great whats.
I think that was my mom under an anonymous. Lats as in Lats from
Lats.
Lats like from professional muscle.
That's the same Lats. One in the same.
Oh shit.
Yep. To all, what's best way to consume more food calories? Are there supplements you can take to increase appetite? I currently am on enamoralin type pill from local shop store. It's called Pro Growth, but its ingredients are 2-amino. I don't even know what this is. I'm not even going to try to read it because it's literally like 3 sentences long of just like hyphens and numbers and dimethyl amino something or another. I don't even know what it is, but it's to increase appetite. It says, I'm very active in the gym 6 days a week. He's a UPS driver. I'm not burning my food each meal. Currently eat 5 meals a day. Basically, he's looking to get more food in, and he feels like he's not able to basically burn through the food that he's eating now, let alone try to squeeze more in. He lists out his food too. He's saying the foods he eats are like 8 ounces of protein, 4 ounces of carbs, sweet potato, jasmine rice. And he wants to know, and he's doing like 4 ounces of dark green vegetables per meal. Should I look into denser snacks between meals? Also starting a dozen eggs a day boiled and eaten as snacks. Scott, what do you have to say here, man?
What do you say? What do you say he did for a living?
He's a UPS driver.
Okay. Well, so he's got a job where he's on his feet all the time, yeah, moving. So his body is accustomed. I guess the best way to put it is his set point is probably set to a point where his body's used to all this activity. And, you know, I would say, be honest with you, if you added some cardio in, some HIIT cardio a couple days a week, maybe 3 or 4, I bet your appetite would increase. Because I think you've reached kind of that plateau. I've had, you know, I mean, guys that work in like labor intensive jobs, you know, their body tends to adjust or set at a certain point.
Yeah.
And it kind of slows everything down. You could also look to change the kind of food you're eating. Maybe eat, you know, incorporate some stuff that's a little, you know, that digests faster. Like red meat and stuff doesn't digest as fast. So if you're eating a lot of slow digesting foods, that could be a problem. I would bet if he threw some HIIT cardio in 3 days a week, that his appetite would go up.
Okay, I'm not sure I understand based on the information you gave. So let me ask you if this is right.
Yeah.
First, I get that he's a UPS driver. He trains 6 days a week.
Yep.
He said, I believe, that not only is his, he wants to eat more food, but that he's ripping through. Isn't that what he said? Ripping through the meals?
No, I think he said trouble eating them.
He says, I'm not burning my food each meal. I currently eat 5 meals a day, 8 ounces of protein, 4 ounces of carbs, sweet potato or jasmine rice, 8 ounces on high days, 4 ounces of dark green veggies per meal. So he's eating like clean foods, it sounds like, you know, for the most part.
But he wants to eat more. Why?
He must feel like he's not. Well, I'll tell you what, man. When I worked for the pop company, as we call it, pop here in Michigan.
So what's a pop? Oh, like soda?
Soda, yeah.
Okay.
I couldn't eat enough food, man. That's when I was at like between 8 to 10,000 calories a day at one point, and I ended up destroying my digestion. And a lot of that was shakes, you know, like make it yourself type shakes using maltodextrin powder and carbo load and stuff like that. Plus fast food. And I couldn't, like, dude, I still looked lean. Like I had veins all over because I was on my feet working so much.
But you were ripping through those meals, right?
Yeah.
He said, he's not.
Yeah.
The thing is this, how long has he been doing it? Like I was a beer truck driver for like 4 years.
Yeah.
And at first I lost all this weight. I could have ate 100 times a day, but eventually you do it long enough and your body gets used to it. And then I started eating less. I didn't have as much appetite. I didn't lose any more weight. Actually, I gained weight at one point, even doing the same job with basically the same meals. So I think his body just I bet you if he throws in some HIIT cardio and gets the slow digesting proteins out of there, if he's using them. So like if he goes to like fish and stuff from red meat or something like that, I bet you his metabolism picks up and he's able to consume more food.
I'll tell you what, I hope he does that because I want to know. So if you're listening, and I hope you are because you asked a question, so you would think you would listen for the response. So I'm going to assume he's listening. But if you do the HIIT cardio for a couple weeks or 2 or 3 weeks, something like that, 3 weeks, come back and let us know because this is what I'm thinking. I'm not trying to be argumentative. I mean, Scott and I typically agree. This one I don't agree on, and I understand we don't know the entire background here, but if he's training 6 days a week and he's a UPS driver who's constantly moving, I don't see the benefit of doing you're basically, now I understand what you're saying, Scott, about sometimes there can be a set point and everything, but that's That is a ton of activity. It's a ton of training. Yeah. So, I mean, I would even wonder, too. I'm like, if the guy's natural, I don't even know how he's recovering from this, because he could have a slower metabolism and everything else. But based on what I perceive as his level of activity between training 6 days and a UPS driver, even loading UPS trucks, for fuck's sake, is incredibly physical and incredibly demanding. So I'm trying to figure out how on that diet he's even able to recover or not feel like he's not just ripping through, like starving. I don't know how he's not fucking starving. Now, he could be, you know, a competitive, maybe he's a smaller guy. Maybe he's only, you know, I mean, I hate to say this, because just because you don't weigh very much and you're a smaller person doesn't mean necessarily that your metabolism is shit. I've seen 120-pound figure girls out eat, NFL linemen on skip loads and things like that and get lean. So, but there's just something there that kind of doesn't add up. But if he's going to do the HIIT cardio, I want to know if it works. If it works, I'm going to have to bow to Scott and be like, holy fuck, dude, I would have never even looked at that.
I'm going to bet he's been a UPS driver for several years.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's on there, if he asked the question live, but
he didn't know.
I'm telling you, I can tell you anecdotally, that's how it happened to me. I mean, you'd think, man, you're sweating your ass off. You're doing all this labor. I mean, and all of a sudden things just slow down because your body assimilates to that activity over time. Now, if you do it for 6 months, that's not what I'm saying. But after a couple of years of it, man, you assimilate to it. I actually started gaining weight and eating less because I just, you know, I had to change up my training and my food a little bit, you know, and I was eating a lot of like slow diet. Like I was a big steak guy. So I got away from that and, you know, it is what it is. I mean, everybody's a little different on that, but I'd say those UPS guys, they can, you know, they're humping it pretty good. You know, they're running around in and out of the truck and you just get, your body gets used to it.
I know that for me, appetite was always an issue. Even though I was eating so much food, I still needed to eat more in order to grow. And I feel like if there's anything I were to have done different going back, at the time, I wasn't as aware of things like digestive enzymes like I am now. And I found that if my digestion does slow down at all, that's something that I can look at. Definitely, yeah, digestive enzymes, digestive health in general. He's talking about, let's see, what else did he say? So I don't even know what the supplement is here. Do you guys find the supplements like GHRP6? Do you find that does help with appetite from what you've seen? I don't think you've used that before, Skip.
At first, yeah. I mean, you feel like you just eat your arm off right after it. But I think that for most folks, I wouldn't say everybody kind of wears off after a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't feel like it's an answer, you know. Also, the EQ thing. Do you guys ever have that experience? People would be like, I don't really either. Okay. I've never found anything that really, like, made me hungry. I would say the best thing I could do. IGF. Well, there is that
makes me ravenously hungry.
There is that you will get a blood sugar fluctuation in there. So I think that can happen. You know, is it after you eat or after you take it?
Well, it's after I take it, but I've also got plenty of carbs in me, and I don't usually drink intra carbs.
Yeah,
and I'm drinking a significant amount of intra carbs, and I just it's not for me. It's not the and it's not only after I dose it, but I do dose it prior to training. So it just makes me ravenously hungry because I end up ripping through calories and I get retardedly lean when that's the only thing I change in my.
Got to be skip loading. It has to be. There's no other way around it.
I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I just got lean as fuck. I get very, very lean. And now I've had a handful of clients playing with them too. They want to experiment with it in a similar matter and not changing other variables so that you know what kind of impact it has and similar, response. So it's pretty crazy. It's not anything I expected. I don't expect And I notice it with growth too. Be honest, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but it's more significant than I think most people think.
For some people, because I don't get that from growth, but I've heard other people say that, yeah, I'm ravenous. I take GH and now I'm star, you know, like that they, or the same people, there's other people that are like, I get my sleep is a lot better when I use growth hormone.
I don't get ravenous from using GH, but I am more hungry.
Yeah, and I don't get that at all.
I think what happens is sometimes, and I'm not going to, you know, single anybody out because I have respect for the people that were talking about it, but there was a post on social media within the last week having to do with IGF and localized growth and things like that.
Yeah.
And kind of how silly it was to not take an IM, as if that were the only benefit to using, you know, IGF. Huh. There are other components that make it, you know, not so silly to not inject it locally. So, which doesn't mean that you shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't inject. All I'm saying is there are other aspects or other components to, you know, GH and IGF use than just localized growth too. And one of them is obviously, or one of the most obvious ones is the metabolic impact, because it's pretty significant. It'll be more significant with some than others, but it's still pretty significant.
So much here. At the end of the day, I've personally never taken, I don't think, any supplements that helped my appetite consistently. Maybe if that works for you and it works for other people, that could be a potential. I'm just looking for answers for him right now. Like, what could he, is there anything he could quote unquote take? And my thought is first get your, my thought would be, one thing I would change would be my digestion and try to get that moving as fast as possible. Now, interestingly, because like I said, I've heard other people say growth hormone has increased appetite for people. I was talking to someone this past week. Now I know that insulin slows down gastric emptying, so it can decrease appetite. I guess growth hormone has the same effect on gastric emptying. So if you slow down gastric emptying, you would think that you wouldn't get hungrier. So it's got to be something completely different. It's not like you're burning through the food, you know what I mean, to make you hungry. There's something, another element there that's happening.
I'll tell you one thing I did, and I remember I just thought of this. When I had that problem, I took some Cytomel, dude. I was like, 100 miles an hour. It was like
that made me hungry. You're right.
That was the best kick I ever got, and that was back when I had that same problem, when everything just kind of went, you know, my metabolism dropped, and I was doing all that labor. I took some Cytomel, and I was like, man, the whole world just took off.
But that's gonna burn through your everything you're eating, though, right?
Well, I got hungry. Yeah, I mean, everything kind of just kicked off with that.
Yeah.
So not that it's something I'd recommend to the person, but it did work. Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we'll move on here. We have a couple more questions and we'll try to get wrapped up here shortly. Any exercises you guys do strictly at home, like while you're watching TV?
No.
No.
Couch planks.
Neither.
I take that back. Every once in a while, I'll lay on. I get my wife's got one of those the balls, the stability balls.
Do you do that?
And well, actually, I may start out with it, just kind of stretch my back, and then, you know, I might do like a Superman or two until I fall on my face, and then I get back on the couch. So, no, not really.
Looking down here. I don't know how to answer this one, but you guys might have an answer. What causes reactive hyperglycemia? I'm currently in the off season and stick to my macros pretty damn good. Went to breakfast with a buddy and honestly really didn't even go crazy. Small portion of hash browns, chicken fried steak, a roll with jam, and two eggs. Likely wasn't even as big as my normal breakfast. 2 hours later, I was at 51 milligrams per deciliter. Side note, I'm not on anything that should cause a crash in blood sugar. I'd be interested in your gentlemen's opinions on why it happens.
I would say, because this happens to me sometimes, if I do too much of the sweet thing and then I go and cut the carbs out and then I do that for a couple of days and I come back in and eat some carbs like in a morning meal, I'll get, you know, I wouldn't say my blood sugar drops super low, but it's reactive. So it gets high and drops back down quickly, which is really what's happening to him. His blood sugar may not be super low or dangerously low, but he's getting a quick drop in it. And that happens to me sometimes. Especially if I, let's say like around the holidays, have too much sweets and then I go, oh, I'm going to straighten myself back out. And so I eat clean, drop a lot of the carbs out, especially in the evening meals. And then I go and maybe eat something in the morning that's a little higher in carbs. It'll happen occasionally.
I wonder what his BG levels are prior to that. Mm.
Yeah. Mm.
And I'm going to say, I'm going to, it's like go against Scott Day or something. I don't know. The listeners should be loving it. Like, well, Skip seems to be disagreeing with everything Scott says. No, not necessarily, but I'm looking at it from a different angle. I think he's actually probably low. Hmm. He takes the meal, and even though it's not a lot, it's enough of it, you know, and the body always overcompensates by providing or creating more insulin than is needed. So he gets a little bit of a sugar surge. The insulin then brings it back, and it's below the baseline that it was prior to, because 51 is, you know, I mean, you don't want to, you don't want to be down there. I mean, that's when you're going to, that type of level right there is when you're going to get very lightheaded while doing cardio. And if you haven't been there, it's not a very good feeling. And if he's not using any, I'm actually surprised that he's not using. I expected to hear something like, you know, oh, I'm using metformin, or I did something in there. You know, I did cardio, or I don't know something. Yeah. But that's really, I just spit out half of the volume of fluid in my mouth right there. I'm sure everybody saw that in HD. Anyway, it's just kind of an odd situation where there's not a lot of a lot of carbohydrate in that meal, but that's what makes me think. If he had a bunch of carbs, that'd be, you know, if he was eating like I do and had a couple plates of French toast and shit like that, but it doesn't sound like that. So I'm going to guess that it was probably low going in. He got the surge, even though it wasn't a ton of carbs, but it was enough, obviously, that the body overcompensates with more insulin than is needed, and he ended up lower. He was probably low to begin with, but then lower. And did he say he was lightheaded, or did he say he was anything like that?
I don't think he said any side effects. I wonder what prompted him to, he said 2 hours later, I was down to 51.
See, so he had to feel something.
Yeah, I wonder.
Unless he's just constantly monitoring his blood glucose. But if he was constantly monitoring his BG, he would have also given what that BG was prior to the...
Yeah.
I'm being presumptive, but I would think that he...
I would think you're... Yeah, that would make sense.
I think you're wrong, but let's go ahead.
All right. I think that about wraps us up. We did have one from Christian Duke throughout here on the live feed. He said, have you guys ever done a consult with a potential client and asked to see what their old plan looked like and it was yours? I've heard some horror stories of people selling coaches' plans. It's insane.
That's funny.
Ooh.
I've had more than one client show me a supplement plan that I know that was mine that went to somebody else. Yeah.
Here's my, I'm going to piggyback off of Scott, and I'm going to say this. Really honestly, and I don't want this to sound shitty or, you know, like I'm pontificating or anything like that, but it might. If you have not had your shit copied, stolen, semantics changed just enough so it's not technically plagiarism, you just haven't trained enough clients yet. When it comes back to you, that's like the holy grail. That's like the...
So that's happened?
Oh, yeah. Well, it may not be exactly like verbatim, but you can look at components and go, wow, this is kind of odd that six or seven of these of these 10 points are things that I fucking do. So, yeah. I mean, clearly, you, really all you can kind of do, I used to get pissed and people would be like, oh, imitation's the best form of flattery. No, it's not, bitch. You're stealing shit from me.
Yeah.
And it's really not this complimentary thing. It's a shit fucking thing about this industry. It just is. But you know what? You go into other things. I just use my wife as an example. You know, she always says it's management too. The people above you sometimes take credit for the shit you do when they're in meetings and you don't get the credit, you don't get the accolades, but you do the work. So I don't think it's necessarily specific to our industry. We're just more, our industry is more, they just don't give a fuck. It's just, what do I want to say? It's more like, it comes across so much more as selfish and self-serving, probably because of the industry we're in, but nonetheless, it's people don't care. They don't care if they get caught. They don't care if they're probably because it's all, a lot of this is, you know, internet based. We're not going to see each other face to face, that sort of shit.
Yeah.
It sucks. It's a shitty part of the gig, but, it's just, it's so common that you can't really get pissed about it for very long because it's going to happen. It's just going to happen. There are going to be people who want to work with you specifically to get your knowledge, get your information, and potentially take exactly what you're doing, because in this industry, you can go make, might not be a lot, maybe it's just a side hustle, but you can go make money off of other people's shit.
Sure. Sure.
When it happened to Mountain Dog, I had to laugh. And I don't mean laugh because he's a great guy and I never want to see shitty things happen to great people. But yeah. Misery loves company. And I admit that I was like, thank you. I'm not the only one getting shit on. This is fucking awesome. And he was pissed. And that guy does not get pissed very often.
No.
So, and I get it. I could totally relate. But it was kind of admittedly misery loves company. Like, I'm glad to see you're down with my fucking, now you know what I felt like 4 years ago or by however long ago it was.
It is what it is.
I remember when that went down with Meadows. That, yeah, you know, Dr. Scott Stevenson, he has his book, Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach. I've got on the shelf back there. Yeah. And there's an ebook version of that and somebody pirated it. Yeah. And now you can buy the book for like half of what he charges, which is not a lot of money to buy the ebook. But you can, if you search Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach by Dr. Scott Stevenson, all of the other ones come up first. Get it for $10. Get it for $5. And he told me that he finds that that's like what a lot of people are buying now. They're buying the pirated version. There's companies that just go around and pirate like all the fitness material they can. Yeah. And then they put those ebooks out and they sell them all themselves. Like, man, that irritates me, you know, because it's just they are legitimately stealing. Plus they're making money off of it. You know, the reason
Chinese model, man, you know, yeah. Intellectual property theft.
I know that, like totally off subject of this stuff is, their Vespa had a scooter building facility in India. And I was just talking to somebody about this. One of our listeners, actually, shout out to Andrea. She lives in Venice Beach and she wanted to buy a scooter to drive to work. And so we were just talking about this, but they shut their plant down in India. But because it's India and they don't give a fuck about patents, somebody else bought the plant and they opened it back up. And they just changed the name using the same equipment and everything to continue building scooters called Genuine. That's the name of the brand.
Vespas.
Wow.
You know, yeah. I read something about that. Yeah. Yeah. They do a lot of that over there.
They're good scooters too. That's the thing.
Well, of course, because they're basically Vespas. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's how the Chinese make all their money, stealing intellectual property.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, think about it. It's probably no different than buying an Insignia versus a Samsung when basically the same company makes the same goddamn television.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's those two. So,
right.
Those two don't match up. But you get my point. I don't know that whether it's Insignia or whether it's Samsung, but the point is you have grade A and grade B type products that are made by the same company. They just have a different label on them. So, I don't know, man. An intellectual property, I hear what you're saying, but good luck with that internationally.
Oh, yeah. I don't think
there's very many people. And not only to get that protect, but to actually go after people, it's just not feasible. It's just not going to, it's not worth the time. It's definitely not worth the money.
Yeah.
But it just sucks because that's the industry that we, it's the industry we, it's very, very telling of a lot of people, not everybody, but it's very telling of a lot of the people in the industry. It's a very me, fuck you, type of thing. So whether to steal ebooks or steal someone's information, and it's just all, look, the bodybuilding industry is about as seedy as the porn industry. I've always said that, and I do believe that. Yeah, I hate to put a bad mark
maybe
on
soft porn. Soft porn.
I don't want to put a bad label on porn industry, but the point is, I want to point out and make it very, very clear that there are a lot of good people in the industry, a lot of good people. The problem is you can become so cynical, because I've been there, and jaded, because you start to focus on all the, it's like you got a bunch of peaches and, you know, three of them are bad, but you've got seven good ones. Instead of eating the seven good ones, you just stand there and complain about the three bad ones, wasting your energy, and you're starving. It just, but it's those three bad ones that you end up focusing on and paying attention to. And I know for a few years, I was pretty fucking negative and shitty about the industry because I was so focused on all the negativity, and it was overpowering until I could just really step back and go, look, I've got awesome clients. The people that I deal with on a daily basis are great people. They're family people. They're not these shitbags. But damn it, man. It just, I would remind people, it takes one fucking douchebag meathead with a shitty attitude to really make every other bodybuilder and everybody else in the bodybuilding industry look like shit when you act like an asshole. Mm. And I do really believe you have an obligation, if you're about, I think, to represent what you do and the other people in the industry and in your sport and that sort of thing. So when you act like an asshole, you're representing everybody. When you act like a good fucking nice person, you represent everybody. Mm. I wonder why people think we're all shitbags.
I think it's cool, Skip, that you, I mean, this is, you know, this is the industry where you make your living. This, you're inundated with bodybuilding, you know, whether you want to be or not, this, it is your life. And just like it is my life too, you know, and I think it's cool that not only have you realized that, but you can still used to, cause I know that you still love the sport at the end of the day, that you can accept that that's the way it is and not let it consume you.
Yeah, I just think it ebbs and it flows, like with anything else. I mean, it's, you know, it's training motivation, it's dieting motivation. It's I think I've always been passionate about it, but it's the same thing with dealing with people. Mm. You know, I didn't want to go to shows for a long time for that reason too. And it, so it does, it ebbs and flows. You do something long enough, really long enough, not fucking 5 years or, you know, that sort of shit. And they're the first ones to criticize me, which I think is fucking hilarious. But do something long enough and you're going to have those times where it and the people involved in it will get under your skin. Be an accountant for 25 years.
Yeah.
The people will get under your fucking skin. Eventually they'll get to you. But that's the up and down. You know, I'm on an upward swing now because I took that fucking break and was able to step back, and I needed it so bad. There are good people. You guys aren't two of them, but there are good people in this industry.
Skip, I've never heard you be cynical or negative about anything. You're such a positive. You're like a bright light in my life every 2 weeks. You glow. You make me feel warm and comfy.
You haven't heard me do that in the last 2 weeks.
I mean, that's. I get excited every 2 weeks. I mean, I sit in front of my new laptop that I had to get because you guys bitched about my other stuff with my new microphone. Actually, Scott bought me that I broke and fixed. And I, when he's going to go, hey, I'm going to click, you know, link into Skip. I feel the warm fuzzies come through me.
See?
Get excited. And with no hat on, I got more excited.
I'm just glad I can have that impact on somebody else. So that makes me feel warm and fuzzy. Yeah. Thank you.
I want to hug you through this.
I think it's a bonding right now. I think we're bonding. Yeah.
All right, guys, on that note, for another episode of Blood, Sweat and Gear, check out teamskip.com. And of course, are you intense enough? Go to Intense Muscle. Is it IntenseMuscle.com?
It is.
Okay, check it out, guys.
In the thousands.
And, of course, guys, check out TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES for some savings over there. And this has been another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear. We'll see you next time, guys.